Welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor. I actually just had my first cohort graduate, and it was awesome. And anyway, I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into spaces of creativity and wonder, and watching their students embrace that maker mindset that we know they all have inherently. And before we get started, I just want to say, if you enjoy this podcast at all, would you leave a review on iTunes? It's what allows it to move up in the rankings, and then it's easier for people to find it. So anyway, if you like this podcast, that would mean the world to me if you left a review. So I just watched the movie La La Land for the first time. I know it's like everybody's already seen it. They saw it in the theaters. They saw it on video. But I finally watched it. I'm not a huge fan of musicals, and so I was really, really reluctant. But I was mesmerized by it. It was enchanting. It was amazing visual storytelling. The colors, the cinematography, yes, even the music. And it struck a chord in terms of this deeply human longing to chase your dreams. And it's captured, I think, in the line toward the end of the movie when Mia is singing and she says, "Here's to the ones who dream, foolish as they may seem. Here's to the hearts that ache. Here's to the mess we make." But there's something that nagged at me the next morning as I tapped away at the keyboard and started working on a second draft of a book. And I was thinking about creativity, about the work I do, about the life that I have. And it's this, that beneath the vibrant splashes of colors and the brilliant bursts of jazz is this very lonely story of the sacrifice of chasing one's dreams. It's the idea that in order to pursue your dreams, you have to put relationships aside and focus on this very solitary effort of creative work. It's what happens when Mia quits her job and spends weeks scratching out line after line of a one-woman play. But here's the thing. I don't buy it. Okay, maybe that's a little bit strong. Sometimes the creative journey does work like this. There are moments when creative work is lonely, or when people just have to pursue their dreams at all costs, when they remain fixed on this single vision of what they will accomplish, this dream that they have of what they want to make. But often there's a second type of creative journey, one that is more fluid, more collaborative, and it's more like an evolution. For a film that borrowed from this jazz motif, I'm kind of surprised that the filmmakers missed this second side of creativity, this social and serendipitous side of imagination and dreams and creative work. I think the second route is often how creativity works, but it's rarely the way that it's presented in movies because, I don't know, it maybe doesn't seem to be how we think of when we think of creative genius. But I would argue it's actually more often the case that there is this very different second route. And so I'm going to share what it looks like. So I thought about this creative journey, this dream-chasing journey, whatever you want to call it, the next morning. And I was sitting in my car listening to the How I Built This podcast with my kids. It was Take Your Children to Work Day, so I made them listen to a podcast because I said, this is what I do on the way to work. And they absolutely fell in love with the podcast. It was an episode with Haim Saban, the media mogul who is most famous for creating Power Rangers, but who really has just a fascinating story coming from Israel, first Egypt, and then Israel, being dirt poor as a child and then really a true rags to riches kind of story. But his story was essentially the opposite of La La Land. He began as a musician in a band and then shifted to being a promoter and eventually writing theme songs and library music for cartoons and finally moving into full-blown media mogul, or mogul, however you pronounce it. I've heard both ways. And his is a story of pivoting, of collaboration, of allowing dreams to evolve. In other words, his is sort of a story of jazz, of free jazz, I would argue. And while every single creative journey is different, I think it's interesting how often these makers interviewed on How I Built This, whether they are artists or dreamers or entrepreneurs or whatever, fit this second type of creative narrative, this evolutionary, dynamic, fluid kind of creative arc. That's often how it works. And it has me thinking about a few trends that I've seen in the creative journeys that I've noticed in listening to the How I Built This podcast, but also in talking to entrepreneurs and artists and makers in a broad range of industries. I often find that they have this second type of route that's nothing like the movie La La Land. And so I want to explore a couple different ideas. Number one, these stories are often this second type, this fluid type. They're often about the power of pivoting. In La La Land, there is an obsession with staying single-mindedly focused on a specific external achievement. It's sort of like the musical version of the movie Rudy, right? But often those who are successful in their creative work are able to adapt and pivot and change their goals as they move along the journey. Take Pixar. They began as a technology company. When the newly ousted Steve Jobs joined them, they were going to be a competitor to Apple. They were going to sink the former company. They were sort of this, well, this revenge company in Steve Jobs' mind. But instead, they evolved into, well, this entertainment company. They took their technological expertise and they paired it with John Lasseter's brilliant storytelling ability to revolutionize the cartoon industry. And in the process, they crafted some of the greatest cultural myths that we've seen in the last few decades. I've said this before, but if you don't cry in the first 10 to 15 minutes of the movie Up, I'm not really sure that you're truly human. You might actually just be a cyborg. Now, in my own life, I think about my own dreams. When I was in college, I wanted badly to someday become a history professor. That was my favorite subject. That was my major. And I believed that, you know, maybe that's what I wanted to do and to be. But here's the thing. If I had moved on to graduate school and simply continued on this history route, I would have experienced the PhD grind. I would have spent over a decade as an adjunct hoping for a shot at a full-time position. I would have been focused on research and never learned the craft of teaching. I would have been really a pretty mediocre teacher, teaching something that I someday probably would have fell out of love with, which was history. I would have worked tirelessly with this uncertain hope of someday having a shot at my dream. But I also would have missed out on something more. I would have missed out on 12 amazing years of getting to teach middle school. I would have missed out on the chance to hone my craft every single day as a teacher. I would have missed out on those paradigm shifts towards student-centered learning and project-based learning and rediscovering how design thinking can transform all of it. I would have missed out on the chance to rekindle my love for creating art and for writing fiction and for geeking out on the creative process. In other words, this moment never would have happened for me when I rediscovered that actually I was still a creative person. This moment that happened when my students were painting a mural and they invited me along with the process. And I tried my best to find a, quote, real artist until I realized that we were real artists, every single one of us working on this mural. There's a video on this blog post connected to this podcast. And in it, I share the story of how I found my creative voice again. But that would never have happened if I hadn't been in the classroom. If I had gone the graduate school route, I would have never blogged or written books for the sheer fun of writing. I would have never tried Twitter and met some of the coolest people on the planet who are now some of my best friends. But here I am now at 37 years old, working as a professor, doing creative work that deeply matters to me, and truly doing things that feel meaningful. It is so much better than simply chasing tenure as a history professor. And I am so glad that I chose to pivot. Now consider this idea for a moment. What if La La Land had ended differently? No. I'm not talking about what happens to their relationship. I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm talking about the creative side of it. What if Mia had realized in writing a script that she was actually a better screenwriter than an actress? What if she found that the little twists and turns from making stories as a child through bad auditions and into this one-woman play had actually given her a broad range of talent that she could then use as a writer? What if that's where she ended up? Not where she expected, but where she was meant to be. Now, some would see that as a tragedy, but I would argue that that is often how creativity works. Number two is a little different. It's the idea that creative work is inherently collaborative. In La La Land, you have this idea that each individual has a creative dream and they simply have to go out and pursue it on their own, even if it means pushing away the people they love. But creative work is almost never like that. It's almost always the result of relationships. People join communities, they network with people, and they end up collaborating on projects together. Even those in traditionally solitary areas of writing, for example, end up bouncing off ideas with close friends and fellow colleagues. And these people offer critical feedback to their craft. I would argue that there's power in reaching out to a trusted community and choosing to be vulnerable. And as I interview entrepreneurs and artists, I'm struck by how often they are seeking input from community. They join mastermind groups. They seek out mentors. They build a tribe of people who care about their work. They partner with like-minded people. They are always working with others. Again, there's a video, you can check it out on spencervideos.com, where I contrast collaboration and cooperation. You might want to check it out for kind of a picture of what collaboration could mean. But I think that's what it's all about. Creative work is inherently collaborative. And I find the same thing, again, to be true in my own life. I didn't have any actual success in my creative work until I learned how to collaborate with others and embrace critical feedback. Point number three, makers are often jacks of all trades. There's this popular idea, and you see it in La La Land, that you should stick with a niche, right? Figure out a passion, work tirelessly at perfecting it, and then find success in that narrow area. You see this with the jazz-obsessed Sebastian, who not only won't consider other genres, but isn't willing to pay any attention to the innovators in jazz from the 1960s until now. And then you see it in Mia, who spends every hour with this tunnel vision focus of improving her craft as an actress, taking on any role she can, and really trying her best to just land it. But there's a cost to this approach. Often those with a narrow niche become risk averse and focus too much time and attention on what others in the field think of their work. They become insecure and they fail to see how other disciplines can offer skills, ideas, and innovations they haven't considered themselves. I would argue that intellectual diversity is actually what makes you better in your niche or niche. Intellectual diversity leads to innovation because people connect seemingly disconnected ideas and practices. Now, sometimes this doesn't work out properly, and you have things like, well, combining the vacuum and hair trimmer to create the Flowbee. That was really not a great idea. But there are many more cases where you see people like Darwin, who studied geology and geography, but completely rocked the world of evolutionary biology. Experts often experience a tunnel vision built around the sheer amount they know about one domain. But reality is always connective, and domains don't exist in silos. When you are a jack of all trades and you study multiple ideas all over the place, you often end up with a better understanding of your actual area of expertise. Again, I find it fascinating that many of the most innovative artists, entrepreneurs, and engineers have this Da Vinci-like fascination and ability to just geek out on everything. They perfect a broad range of skills, and then they transfer those skills to new areas of skills, constantly becoming better because they have these transferable skills and mindsets. They study ideas from unrelated fields and apply a new lens to a problem within their field. And as a result, everyone is better. Point number four, always choose love. I recently wrote about this idea and I had a podcast about it where I talked about choosing the right side of the list. In other words, the part of the list that's about people and relationships, community, life satisfaction, peace, personal growth. It's the idea that the epic life is found not in chasing a dream of doing something big and profound in your creative work, but in those little moments in life that draw you closer to people. Again, I'm going to tell you there's a video called What If the Small Life is Actually the Epic Life? And you can find it at spencervideos.com. And you can find it at spencerauthor.com as well. But go check it out. It's one of my favorite sketchy videos I did, even though it's a little bit old now. But here's what I find fascinating. It's that many of the most creative people were actually more productive and created more original work when they were connected to loving relationships, when they carved out space and rest for things like play and people. So there's this sense in which Mia and Maya and however you say her name, I keep saying Mia and Maya, and I'm not really sure how I think it's Mia and Sebastian might have both been more productive if they had chosen to connect to a community or to cultivate a world outside of their internal creativity. In the entrepreneurial world, we often talk about something called the baby effect, where people expect to accomplish less after they have a child, only to realize that they are more focused, more driven, more efficient, but also more creative after they have a kid. I would argue that a part of it is they have space away from their creative work, and that extra space is actually really important in terms of just the sheer cognition that goes on when you're not engaged in your work. But you become more driven because your work is now serving more than just yourself. And so all of this to say, there is this very different secondary notion of the creative journey that doesn't look anything like the movie La La Land. And I would argue that that's a good thing. I would argue that actually the creative journey is often fluid. It's often about pivoting. It's often deeply connected to the people around you. It's collaborative. And I would argue more than anything, it is built on this idea of uncertainty. This idea that life is short, and if you stay completely fixated on one dream that you had at a younger age, you might miss those opportunities that come up, those little ways that life will surprise you. So as I think about what it means for teachers in the classroom and what it means for people who are makers, I would just say maybe it's time we are open to those little ways that life will surprise you. Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Again, you can find it at creativeclassroompodcast.com. And if you enjoy this, please leave a review. That would mean the world to me. Have a wonderful day and keep on doing amazing things in your classroom. And go out and make something.